Well, here we are talking about really relevant things in the world.
Oh my God, that sounds so serious.
Well,
but here we are. But we were here just last night. We went out to dinner.
We did go out to dinner last night.
It was lovely. Yep. I had a lovely time.
It was very, very nice. The food was good. The company was meh.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. Words.
I thought the company was delightful.
Well, no, I kid. The company was smart and funny.
Well, it wouldn't go that far.
Okay, I agree. yeah, we were out there. And Torin, you had noticed something about that night. What was it?
It was a freezing cold
night.
That's
true. It was very cold.
I was also there. And I noticed that, Dean, you were wearing a coat that had a little...
Of many colors.
Actually, just one
color.
We were calling you Joseph,
and
I believe.
We're now, yeah, we're going to list all the colors now.
Yeah.
No, it was an orange coat, and it looked very warm. And it had a little insignia that said Antarctica on it.
Right,
so I was very intrigued.
Yeah, both my wife and I were wearing our Antarctica jackets, which are jackets that are given to you if you go on this cruise to Antarctica. And it's part of it because the company wisely doesn't want anybody to freeze to death.
Are they orange so they won't lose you?
And they are orange so that against the ice,
you'll stand out.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
absolutely.
A lot of sense.
Right,
yeah.
Because you are literally walking on the continent of Antarctica, and it's vast. Vast beyond words.
Yeah.
And there are no people. There are no towns. There are no cities. There are penguins and seals and birds.
Right.
And ice.
And scientists. Those are the only people on Antarctica, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
From all over the world who have to communicate with each other. Mm. And so therein is an issue of culture. Which
really?
Anybody who goes to Antarctica is going to view the experience through their own life. And my life has to deal with culture because this is, after all,
Oops!
Your culture's showing. And I'm Dean Foster.
And I'm Tom Peterson. And with us in studio today, we also have...
Torin. That's
welcome.
Hey, Torin.
Hi. That's my name.
Who invited
him? I'm having fun.
And we're talking about orange jackets and Antarctica. And
yes,
it's interesting, and culture. And for me, it's kind of interesting because you talk about culture in a place where there really isn't a culture, except the human population is very few and far between. They're in research stations, and they are scientists from all over the world. Mm. Who have to communicate with each other. So I guess there's a cultural element to that. Is in my work, I'm always trying to
help people. I can't
do
see
that.
How they could avoid it.
Right.
That with you're going to have, you know, there's, and I've heard people talk about this. I am not a scientist and not even close. So, but it is there is a culture in science and a way of doing things. Certainly there is a scientific method that is universal. In the sense of the planet, it's universal among scientists, but not where they come from.
Right. And I imagine that was like astronauts as well.
Impacted
right?
by that. I would think so. Sure. Wait a minute. Are there astronauts
together.
In Antarctica?
Yes. Well, okay. Actually,
we actually did some work many years back on one of the Mars missions.
On the continent there?
No, not in Antarctica. This was in the United States. Teams that were working from Russia.
Oh, you did some work
Russian
with them.
And
I
American
see. Sure.
teams.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, who were having to work on the Mars mission together.
Yeah.
So we did the cross-cultural support on that.
Oh,
And yes, the need for that kind of understanding in the scientific research community is great.
Sure.
Right. So we could have gone down to Antarctica to do that, which would have been lovely because then someone would have been actually paying me to make the trip.
Right.
But that didn't happen.
No.
So there I am in Antarctica in my orange jacket so that I stand out against the snow so that they don't lose me. And
good.
My wife.
Probably a good thing.
And about 30 other people.
Okay.
And I understand you can fly into Antarctica, but that's not typically the way most of the time you do it.
So you took a boat?
You have to take a ship. Uh-huh. So we flew down from New York to Buenos Aires, and then from Buenos Aires to Ushuaia, which is the city Tierra del Fuego.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
And the furthest southern point in the Americas. And that's Cape Horn, right there. Mm-hmm. And then you get on a ship, and for 2 or 3 days you sail across the Drake Passage to Antarctica, and you wake up that morning, and the sun is shining, and you open the ship's window of your cabin, and you see this other continent, which, for all intents and purposes, doesn't belong there, in my mind, as I'm looking at it, because I was just at the southernmost point of the earth.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yet, or so you thought.
Or yet, Land's End.
Yeah, Land's End. Yeah. But it wasn't. Yeah. There's yet more to come.
Were you able to walk around on the continent?
Yes, absolutely. So the ship docks as close to land as it possibly can. Mm. And then you go out in Zodiacs that are kind of like these dinghies.
Mm. Yeah, the inflatable crafts.
And the Zodiacs go between the ship and the actual land. Mm. So it was quite a remarkable moment for me. Emotional, really, when you step out of that Zodiac and you put your foot onto the continent of Antarctica.
Mm. Yeah.
It was a very moving moment. I'm not quite sure why, except that I was there. Penguins.
Could you comprehend where you were? Was there an ability? I'm only saying that in the sense that it sometimes in my experience when I've gone somewhere different, it's been almost an interesting aspect of my adapting to it, in that it suddenly doesn't seem that different. It just seems it's another space that I'm in.
I think you're raising a very important point. Yes, because I think one of my initial reactions, and you can have many, you know, I think you don't want to filter these different feelings out, and they can be overwhelming a little bit. Mm-hmm. But one of many feelings and reactions I had was, this is not so different. I've been in cold places before. Mm-hmm. I've seen mountains before. I've seen striking sunshine before. Mm-hmm. I've even seen penguins before in the zoo. So it's not so different. I think we tend to want to see similarities in order to be able to encompass the experience.
Sure.
We have to relate it to something
That's a good point. Sure.
Are you walking on ice, or are you walking on more land, dirt?
Well, it depends.
What are you able
There's gravel, actually, like a beachhead, where you're walking on land. But then the gravel very, very quickly becomes ice.
I see. But there's enough there where you can walk ice, because I assume that's where you were probably walking.
Yes, that's where the dinghy pulls in.
Okay.
But literally within yards of that, you're on ice.
Yeah. Because then that's more, you know, familiar ground somewhat than if you're having to walk on this glacier now.
You mean,
Right.
Yeah.
And so I tended, as you described, Tom, to try to see similarities there. I think in order to minimize the reality.
Overwhelming aspects of it.
Of being in a place so far away.
Sure.
It's
interesting, too, because we do relate that, because you can even say that if you listen to the feedback to the Earth from the first people who walked on the moon,
right.
Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, when they were their first things are, and sure, there's an aspect that science and stuff like that goes with that, but they are then comparing it to what they know about the Earth. You know, he's talking about the depth of the dust, similar to, and he gives some examples and stuff like that as he's going around, because it's familiar, because this is otherworldly.
It is otherworldly.
and that would appear to be, too, I would think. Yeah.
Only I think it's hard to do, if not terrifying. So you want to relate it to things that make you feel comfortable.
Sure. Right? Yeah. And relate to it.
Right. And then a penguin walks up to you. And then I'm reminded, this is very
probably different.
This is pretty different. Did you have maybe scientists there or sort of experts to guide you through what you were seeing?
We were on a remarkable trip, and there were experts and scientists with us. And on this particular trip, we had Cristiana Figueres, who is a foremost climate expert. And so there was a lot of emphasis in this trip on the whole issue of climate and climate change and how it affects Antarctica and subsequently the rest of the world. Christiana, in fact, led the UN climate talks, the Paris Treaty. That was the first big Paris Treaty.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a big deal.
The first big agreement.
But other than that, what's she done? You know?
Yeah. And she spoke about her, that whole experience and how culturally fraught that was.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And
in a way, still is.
Very much still is.
And I remember a very interesting conversation about the cultural issues of getting climate awareness and climate change policies put in place based on culture. And that if we can take the cultures that are involved in this issue, which is all cultures in the world, and leverage the cultural preferences for how they feel about climate change, we can use culture as a lever for getting it adopted more quickly. In other words, my thinking was that there are certain cultures that would get on board with climate, with what we need to do about climate change, if we appeal to what their culture values. If we try to appeal to what the culture doesn't value, it's going to turn them off. So what's going to juice Americans to get behind climate change policies?
Sure.
What's going to juice Chinese to get behind climate change policies? And my thinking was that we've got to emphasize two different things when we're talking to these two different groups, because what's going to juice them is going to be different based on their culture.
It's going to be different, and it would seem to me that it's going to be even different if you've got to sell this to a public as a whole within those cultures. Those cultures aren't the same all throughout.
Right.
They have their own idiosyncrasies, at least, within large countries especially, but even in small countries.
Right.
So you've got to juice not only the overall culture, but you've got to be able to juice enough of those in individual pieces within those cultures.
Right. And
other than that, it's not hard.
Right. And this has to cascade down from leadership and from elites who advocate, right?
Right.
But how do you advocate for it? And the point is that in the U.S., it's got to be advocated around individual benefit and corporate benefit and economic benefit. And
even the idea to make it to get to the point where you get these people thinking that there is a reason to a real reason to pay attention to this, that they will benefit from.
Right, a self-benefit.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In the U.S., as you're talking about, with the culture, since it's an individualist society, or at least believes it is, then in doing so, you're going to have to, what's in it for me?
Yeah. It's the bottom line.
Is this really going to impact me? I don't feel it on a daily basis.
So look at what's been happening in terms of social policy development from this. In the U.S., we get this sell, which is based on there's a green opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be a green economic opportunity for corporations and for individuals.
Right.
And it's got to be green. I'm sorry, it's got to be economic.
It's got to be an opportunity, and it's got to be an opportunity that doesn't come wrapped in a threat.
And it's often, it would be almost impossible to think of it in any other terms for U.S. culture. But that isn't the sell point for a lot of Asian cultures.
Right.
Now, China and the U.S. are pretty much the two big players when it comes to this climate issue. So how are we going to sell it in China? Is
biggest emitters.
And so this, because we've got a society based on this whole notion that almost doesn't exist in the U.S. And in fact, in the U.S., it's looked at in many ways as anathema. But the whole notion of doing things for collective good.
Yeah. Right.
And now that doesn't mean China's a white knight and the U.S. isn't. You know, what we're saying, we all know how that gets corrupted. And all know in an autocratic society like China, it gets very much corrupted. But the sell has to be based on that notion of collective good. And So that you're just going to have to advocate for this in a very different way. So we presented basically this theoretical framework for thinking about how culture impacts the adoption of climate change initiatives. Mm. And of course, they have to go through the political filters and the economic filters of all of these nations. And those are real hard realities. Mm. They are. I mean, the whole notion that a lot of nations that are impacted first by climate change are the least cause of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we create some equity around that, right?
Yeah.
Big political problems.
Mm-hmm.
But stepping back from that, what we were looking at solely was the issue of how do we come up with a theoretical roadmap for dealing with the cultural adoption mm-hmm. of the whole idea of culture change and climate change.
Yeah.
And then we even spoke about Latin America,
where
we've got Brazil, you know, the lungs of the world. There's the Amazon jungle and Amazonas. And so how do we deal with adopting these ideas in Brazil? And at the time, we had Bolsonaro, who was in charge, and mm-hmm. he was denying the whole existence of climate change.
Right.
But we knew that was just a political moment, and that did now disappear, mm-hmm. right? So in Latin America, the cultural requirements for adoption of climate change initiatives are different. In Latin America, culturally, the issue over the centuries has always been aligning yourself with in-groups and out-groups.
Okay.
And if a country could make it look as if the in-group was now advocating for this, then and make it so that people would find benefit in aligning with a particular group, that would be a very powerful way of getting climate change initiatives adopted. So it was a fascinating trip. And we wrote up this theoretical roadmap, and we presented it to the Penguins.
Okay. And what did the Penguins say?
Well, they had a lot to say about this.
Did they? I'm sure.
Yes, they did.
They're annoying. I find them annoying.
They like to squawk.
And they think they're cool because they're always formally dressed.
Yeah, I know.
You know? The bow ties, though. Chill out. I like the bow tie aspect.
Just chill out, Penguins.
It's remarkable how refined they look.
Yeah.
And how much they stink.
Yeah. Yeah.
The two just were
dichotomy.
They were a dissonance in my mind.
Right. Sure.
Because as your zodiac approached the shore.
I've had people say that about me, actually.
Especially when you're in a tuxedo.
Absolutely.
Which you often are.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
A lock. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But you know, I do have another question about the Penguins. In your experience, vast as it is.
With penguins.
With the Penguins. Could they tap dance?
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
Of course. You can give them any tune you want.
Yeah, sure.
Did you film Happy Feet, the sequel to Happy Feet there? Could you work on that?
Yeah.
Here's the thing about
not that. Not so happy Another feet. Sequel. You know, because that's the
not so happy feet.
The climate
not so
change
happy feet.
Video is the
well,
not so
actually,
happy feet.
So to that, I did want to. So okay, I have two questions.
Oh, we've got an actual cultural aspect.
I know. Well, not really on this one.
All
right. Well, I guess sort of. Did you see effects of climate change in Antarctica?
Absolutely.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. In fact, it was very ironic that the very first day that we stepped out onto the ice and encountered a penguin colony of, I would say, tens of thousands of
really?
Penguins.
Really? Oh, my God. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It's not individual. Interesting about the penguins is that from an anthropomorphic perspective, it's easy to see them as creatures in tuxedos and yeah. waddling around
and tap dancing
on cue.
Cute as hell.
And cute and all of that. We're anthropomorphizing these creatures.
Absolutely.
And they're really birds, and they're not living collectively in a society.
Hmm.
We tend to overlay that perception on them because we humans do.
Hmm. Right.
They are living with each other, not because there is a society of behavior that has built up, because they're birds. Mm. They don't. For the same reason that birds will cluster in a bush, in a tree, it's merely for protection.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's one of the, but that still, safety and security is one of the blocks of the pyramid.
Right.
What we see.
But a very fundamental one.
Very fundamental.
There's no society structures and rules.
You're not getting beyond that.
Right. Yeah. So they're not cooperating with each other in any way other than to be near each other so that there's 10,000 of them when the
operation of survival really
right. And survival of the species
right.
when the suas, which are these huge birds almost prehistoric looking things, come swooping in and to scoop up the penguins
the babies.
So there's tens of thousands of them living in these colonies but there's no social structure to these colonies. There's no hierarchy, there's nothing like that, and because they've rarely seen humans. When we land and step onto land, we're now walking amongst them. And they have made their paths. They make these little paths through the colonies. And so you walk on their paths. And you have to be careful because they know no fear.
They
don't know humans can hurt them.
Right.
And so they don't walk away from you.
Yeah.
Some walk up to you, and they're all walking on the path with you.
Right, right.
So we're all using the path that they made to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And you're being escorted, or at least surrounded by and accompanied by penguins.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. That's very amazing. Weird, and I would think. But how long did it take for... And I do believe there actually is some sort of cultural aspect to this. How long did it take before that seemed somewhat normal?
Well, I guess how long were you doing it too? Because
Well, I was only in Antarctica for about a week.
Okay.
And every day we would go on the ice. At the end of the day, you take the Zodiac back to the ship.
Did you acclimate at all?
Acclimate,
so to speak,
to the
surroundings. Yes. I wish I could say I did that on purpose.
I know you did. It's okay.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's to the procedure, to the idea that these things are going to be there and that they're going to walk with you and stuff like that.
On the one hand, it became more comfortable as we became more knowledgeable of what we were encountering.
Uh-huh.
But on the other hand, it became more mysterious too.
Okay.
Because
explain that a little more.
Yeah. See more of it.
Because as we went every day, we learned more about what being in Antarctica was.
Right. Sure. Okay.
And so one day, you know, the first day you get familiar with the penguins at this very superficial level, and the next day maybe a little bit more. But then you learn also as the days go on about these strange other things. See, we're walking down a path and over a crest, and we hear this phenomenal crashing. What's an iceberg calving?
Breaking off.
Okay.
For those who don't know the term,
right?
Yes.
And the sound is like nothing I can imagine.
Sure.
And we were supposed to be in our Zodiacs at one point in a particular cove, and we were in the Zodiacs, and then we had to turn back as quickly as we could because one of the sheer side of a glacier was calving, and when that side came into the water, it was going to create basically a tidal wave.
Sure.
Wow.
And we had to get out.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so we had to hustle back to the ship as fast as we could.
Well, the fact that your guides weren't aware this was going to happen, maybe, I don't know.
They were aware of it. Yeah.
Were they? Okay. I just was wondering, is this something unusual because of climate change was happening more frequently?
Is that happening more frequently? Yeah.
Oh, to your original question, the day that we... first day we landed and stepped onto the ice was the warmest day ever recorded in Antarctica. And although those wonderful orange jackets that we were wearing did keep us very warm, it was too warm. I had to unzip it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great.
Every day that we stayed there, there were more things to learn. And by the time we left, we realized there was so much more to know than what we than what we had learned. Mm-hmm. So the mystery kept compounding. Again, on the Zodiacs going back to the ship in one particular day, we had to really get back to the ship quickly because these winds were coming up. Mm-hmm. And these are winds that are only in Antarctica because they have to do with the fact that the glaciers can be a certain height and the temperature between the top of the glacier and the bottom of the glacier is so distinctly different that it creates this wind. Mm. And once this wind comes up, it's hurricane force.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
So you got to get out of the way fast.
Wow.
So these kinds of things we were encountering over and over again, so that the mysteries only got bigger. Mm. And the strangeness of the place overcame my sense of familiarity, which I realized at the beginning was a defense mechanism.
Yeah, sure. You wanted to feel
in
more
order,
comfortable.
In order to feel well,
and
like
to some
I was
degree, I think yeah. you probably that allows you to in the beginning to drop the defenses somewhat and start to look around.
Right.
And then you take in things like you're talking about, and then that becomes more whatever the impact is going to be.
You become aware of how strange and different
it could be strange or frightening, depending on where you are. And in that case, I can see how that very much could be like that.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
Dean, can I ask? So this is my second question of the two.
No, you can't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So let's move on.
But thank you. Before we wrap up, you mentioned earlier about sort of in-group, out-group dynamics.
For Latin America.
Latin America in particular, mm-hmm. and how that could influence the, you know, the dynamics of climate change, dealing with climate change.
The uptake of solutions.
Can you talk, I know that, obviously, in any culture, any society, there's in-groups, out-groups. Can you talk more about what that looks like in Latin America in particular?
In Latin America, it's been a major theme throughout Latin American history.
Okay.
So there would always be, the indigenous peoples of Latin America, Inca, Maya, Aztec. Yeah. And then suddenly overnight, this in-group
right.
now is deposed.
Right.
And another in-group comes in.
Yeah.
And it starts this process. Mm. Latin American history has always been about the right versus the left, but very extreme versions. So if the right was in power and you remember the right, you benefited. Mm. And then over time, for various reasons, the power shifts and it goes left. And
I see.
Suddenly you have to become a member of the left in order to be to get the benefits of the next decade of years.
Sort of these extremes.
But it's always this swing between extremes, and extremes represented by different groups. Mm. And it's been very hard to do nation building in Latin America because of this, where we can all feel like we're all members of one group called the nation, and that nation exists for me, for all of us.
Yeah.
That's been a major theme in Latin America.
You know, and that's so interesting because to what we were saying earlier about it being a more individualistic society in America, in the U.S. America, it just makes me think of there could be, from your theory to the penguins, it sounds like you're proposing that this effort of focusing around addressing climate change could help to unify the different parties throughout Latin America. Whereas I feel like here in making that argument of like, let's come together as one Earth, that for a lot of folks can be like, well, that's nice, but that's not enough for me.
It's
right.
okay to come together.
So that's very
as long as you're coming together to what I believe.
It's what I believe, and how does it benefit me economically and in other ways?
Absolutely.
Right? But
yes.
Economically, for sure.
Well, the kumbaya aspect of getting people on board, join my group, because it's going to represent more people and it's going to benefit more of us.
Yeah,
there is a kumbaya aspect to it. But at the same time, that has a lot of power. And in Latin America, appealing to people based on that idea that we can all be in this together and benefit all more than just the handful that are benefiting now, that has a lot of power in Latin America.
Mm-hmm. That's an important thing to know if you're in the middle of trying to make people understand what is happening to and why it's happening in a thing like climate change. Absolutely. It's very important. By the way, I believe there's been several different types of species who have been eliminated from this planet due to circumstances, in some cases far beyond their control. but just circumstances that in all of those cases, really beyond their control. Yeah. But because no one's really come along that has been able to contribute to that, with the exception of us, humans.
Oh yeah.
And being able to do that. So you get a...
Well, it's like we're talking about...
It's a totally different
with
game.
With trends earlier, right? With the idea of, yes, there are changes in the Earth. However, you look from the Industrial Revolution on, yeah, all these species have gone extinct, and more climate in the air.
Even
and,
in that small period of time.
Hottest month ever. Every, you know, it's like, okay. Yeah. These trends are very clearly pointing towards there's something in addition going on here.
Yeah.
That we urgently need to address. How do we do it? That's the question. Yeah, we're...
And so we were talking about just one way of addressing it, the cultural issue.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's a whole lot.
Certainly,
of
Certainly, I don't know. But
that's very interesting.
But I don't, and that's an interesting thing too, in the sense that I don't think that we are necessarily needing to address the problem in a cultural way, but we need to address our ability to manage the problem. Definitely in a cultural.
It feels like it has to start
there. That has to be there.
Like, right. like we talk about
oftentimes. We're not going to do it.
As we talk about oftentimes, it kind of has to start there.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I was, you know, my position is always that you got to get the culture right or else nothing else is going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
You think there's a cultural aspect to this?
I think there's a cultural piece to this.
Unbelievable. You know why there's a cultural aspect to this?
Because,
oops,
your culture's showing.
Smell ya. Before you run off and disappear back into your own cultures, let me give you some information about something we really want you to know, and that's how to get hold of us. Give us your questions, your comments, anything along those lines. By email, it's oopscultureshow@gmail.com, and be sure to follow us on whatever social media you use at oopscultureshow. Thanks.